Hey everyone, welcome into another edition of the Woj Pod here in Los Angeles with ESPN's Ramona Shelburne on the morning after the NBA's suspension of Draymond Green for Game 3 of the Warriors-Kings series dropped late last night, Ramona, and very much of a shot heard around the entire NBA. What was your reaction initially to the league's decision?
Well, I was watching the Phoenix Clippers game and saw the announcement come across, and I was stunned. And I think all of us were. I mean, I would like to say I was able to watch the Phoenix Clippers game very closely afterwards, but I think everyone in the NBA was texting, like, just could not believe that this was not so much this was the decision, but that the league really went and did it. Like, obviously this was talked about. I don't think the expectation was that the league would suspend Draymond Green. And then when they actually did, it was like, oh, like, what does that mean? And I've covered a couple of dynasties, Adrian, that they last. And then sometimes the ending really sucks. Like, sometimes the ending is ugly. And I kept having flashbacks to 2011 with the Lakers. Everybody knew Phil Jackson was retiring. There was going to be a lockout. It was like this was the fourth year they were trying to go to the finals, and that series against Dallas where they get swept, and those games were not competitive games, but it was ugly. Remember the Andrew Bynum clothesline and all that? It was just like, is this really how this is going to go? And obviously the Warriors are not done. They're going to have a lot to say about this still, but not having great Draymond Green for game three when you're down 2-0 to a team that has kind of been beating them at their own game, like kicking their ass at their own game, is really damaging.
Yeah, I think, there's this belief that the league plays this favoritism toward big market teams that drive ratings, drive interest, and it certainly punctured that.
Woo!
Right? It punctured that idea that the league would just look at it and say, well, the Warriors are down 2-0. They're on the ropes. Like, we're not going to take Draymond Green out of the game when we already ejected him from game two. Warriors were down 4 when that happened, and then the game got away from them against the Kings from there. But they did, and I don't think it's a small factor that Adam Silver was in the building that night.
Yep.
There are a lot of factors to this. Talk to Joe Dumars, the league's vice president of essentially discipline, is one of his major roles. And he came on NBA Today with us when we were there too. And so there was more than one part of this. It's obviously the stomp on Sabonis. That was the major part of it. But Draymond's behavior, and that's the conduct detrimental, you know, circling the court, getting in by their bench with the fans and kind of working them into a further frenzy.
Yep.
That played a part. And when the commissioner's in the building, it's one thing to see it on tape, but when you're feeling it and you look out and you worry about the escalation of a moment like that, where all of a sudden that's how it started in the palace, right? Somebody throws a cup, and then next thing you know, something is out of hand. And the term the league has used over and over, Joe Dumars did today with us, repeat offender, that this was very much a lifetime achievement award.
Yeah.
If it was any other player, I think he'd be playing game three.
So I remember a similar situation happened with, you know, the artist formerly known as Ron Artest, right? Met a world peace back in the day. And he, you know, he was always in that similar category of like, you know, I got fined or suspended for being on our test, right? Or Meta World Peace. I think he just goes by one of those now. But this is where Draymond is. And I think like that the situation at the beginning of the year, it feels like a bookend, right?
It really is.
You open the season with a punch. A league didn't step in there. It's not really the league's place to step in there.
No, okay? And they left it to the Warriors.
Yeah.
Who did not suspend him.
No.
Who wanted him there opening night for
ring night.
Ring night, and didn't suspend him. And the league said, okay, Joe Lacob, Bob Myers, Steve Kerr, we're going to let you handle this. It was an embarrassing episode for the league to have that on tape, for people to see that.
Yep.
But typically they don't get in the middle of team practice skirmishes stuff, because I'm not saying there's one of those every month or every week. There isn't. That was a unique. But there's... guys go at it, and they leave it to teams to discipline on that. But when the lights are on and it's a playoff game and it's on national TV, that one's not getting left to the team.
No, and I thought it was a raucous atmosphere in Sacramento. I've heard, I wasn't at the games, but I've heard from people who were there. Then, you know, there was a funny video that went around of the fan behind Bob Myers up in the stands ringing the cowbell the whole time. It was a raucous atmosphere. And as you say, like, when you have an atmosphere like that and you have, I mean, Draymond kind of went WWE there. I mean, he was like, you know, playing the heel. Yeah. And on some level, that's entertainment. And some level, you know, people like villains. And it's an interesting story. I have to say, though, I am really surprised.
All that being said,
I didn't think he should have been
suspended. I understand it. You can make a case for it. They have made a case for it. But I think the Warriors' feeling is you partly cost us game two when he was ejected. And I don't think they really are. I don't think anybody there is arguing the ejection.
No.
He escalated it from Sabonis grabbing his ankle. I think the way the league looked at it, there were two different acts. Sabonis got punished. There was a technical foul. There were free throw shot. But I think the comparison someone made to me over there was, you know, if somebody shoves you and then you punch him, you've escalated it, right? The shove is part of it, but, and again, repeat offender, and they use that term.
This is kind of the subtext to all of this. The new CBA just came out a couple of weeks ago, and as you've been reporting on it, Bobby Marks been reporting on it, like, this was a very anti-big market CBA. I think there's a lot of stuff in there that teams like the Warriors that are way over the luxury tax, and that, you know, there's no hard cap, but there's the second apron. We're going to be talking about the aprons a lot over the next few years, but that second apron that the Warriors are going to be subjected to, nobody wants to go over that. The Warriors, the Clippers, the Knicks, the Lakers, whatever big market teams are in position to spend at that level.
It makes it very limiting to almost do anything else with your roster.
Right. And so this has been, you can't separate what's happening on the court right now from what looms in the future with the new CBA. It's got, you know, there's 2 years for this to come into effect, but like the Warriors have to add that into their calculus in how they build the team, adjust the team, et cetera. That new deal is going to really affect the Warriors, I think. And I think they fought hard against a lot of the provisions that and the details that have come out, and they didn't win.
Yeah, and I don't think Joe Lacob, and we're going off track a little bit, but it's a really good point, Ramona. I don't think Joe Lacob's view was, don't let us spend.
Yeah.
That I just want to outspend everybody. I don't think he minds being reined in a little bit by this. Has been a creation of his own success, how well they drafted, players' desires to stay there and continue in Golden State. So much of it is Steph Curry, and it all revolves around him, a superstar who never really thought for a moment about playing anywhere else, who guys want to play with. Kevin Durant came, he left, and they've had a core, and then they draft Jordan Poole. And I think the Warriors, right now, if they kept everybody, which I don't think they will, would be looking at a $500 million payroll and luxury tax next year. And even if you win a championship, I don't know if that you can justify that. I don't think they want to spend that. But you're right about this reining in of these. Really, there were three teams that were in that stratosphere spending the last few years. Golden State, there's been an average of three teams in different years. They've moved in and out. Three teams who spend over that second apron, who are spending just with no real restraint. It was Brooklyn when they had Durant and Kyrie Irving.
Yep.
It was the Clippers with their payroll, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, and everybody else. And then obviously the Warriors. And, you know, we may see, Brooklyn shaved $100 million off of their payroll with what they've done and whatever, Golden State. But it goes back to the idea of this belief of preferential treatment for a big market team. And here are the Kings who get a big break and a big, big opportunity now to take full control of this series in what's going to be a really raucous and emotional chase center for game three in a group that's got plenty enough to go out and win a home game in the playoffs against Sacramento. Still.
Yeah, and this, you know, this may not be the end of the Warriors, right? Like, I think that game three is going to be electric. I think the home crowd is going to feel, they're going to rally behind whoever's out there. I think it's, you know, I was there when Draymond was suspended in the finals game. It was an electric atmosphere. They still lost. So they blew the 3-1 lead. But But, you know, they may not have enough. This Kings team is good. Like, that's the one thing. Like, my takeaway from those first two games is, yes, the Warriors were historically bad on the road this year for a team of that caliber. And they turn the ball over. They're sloppy. They foul a lot. They're bad on the road. But they didn't just lose those games because they're bad on the road. They lost the games because the Kings are good. And they're not going to stop being good just because the game's at Chase Center.
That's right. And it's like you've seen this young team pass a couple tests at home and now going on the road. You know, Andrew Wiggins will be – he's only been back for two games since mid-February. You would think he'll keep playing better as the series goes on. But I just think for Draymond Green and this Warriors organization, how the season started, where you wondered about his credibility in the locker room, his ability, what made Draymond great, part of the thing that makes him great, is his ability to drive his teammates to not just – create havoc with the opposition and be just all the intangibles he brings you and this unique skill set on the floor, but his ability to drive his teammates and push guys and get young guys to understand what it means to be a Warrior and to play the way they do. And I think the concern was that had really been undermined this season, right? And now, even if they feel this was over the top, even if they don't feel it was justified, that the league unfairly punished him, it is still a situation Draymond Green put him in.
Yeah, and I think that's very well said, because I'll tell you, I had seen the Warriors a couple times this year where they were on the road here in LA, and they, as we talked about, they're not good on the road. And it was the last game before the All-Star break, and they kind of got their ass kicked here in LA, both teams. And it was a weird game, because Draymond gave a pretty impassioned post-game speech about how bad their defense was, and like, you have to want it, and you have to, and defense is about effort, it's not just about ability. And it was like, it was one of those speeches, and especially with all the cameras around, where you didn't even have to ask a question. Like, he had something to say. It was a message he wanted everyone in the locker room to hear. And I thought to myself, this is the old Draymond. This is what Draymond would do. Grab the mic, set the tone, give everyone that message heading off into the All-Star break. They were all going away for, you know, 10 days or whatever it was. I want to see what they do the next game. Like, how did that message sit with them? Nothing changed. Like, it didn't land. Like, whatever he was hoping to accomplish with this light a fire under his teammates, I'm going to be the veteran here, and I'm a former defensive player of the year, I'm a guy who should be in that conversation every year. Like, it didn't have the effect that it normally would. I didn't see any difference the next time out when they played on the road. Their defense did not get better. The point of attack defenses was atrocious all year long. That's why they had to go out and get Gary Payton II again. That's why it was so critical they got Andrew Wiggins back, because that perimeter defense has been killing them all year. And so I think, you know, his credibility in that locker room, I think with the veterans, there's a sort of Draymond, they know Draymond, they've been through a lot with him.
It's with the younger players,
right? But it's with the younger players. Yeah. The younger players have not won championships with him except for last year. They weren't there for all those great runs and games against the Cavs. And while they respect him as a player, like, you know, when you punch somebody like he did to Jordan Poole, like, that undercuts your credibility. It just does. Plus, I also think there is he's a different guy too. He's older and wiser, and I've known him the whole time he's been in the league. I remember him coming out of Michigan State, He has always been so smart and so savvy. But like, now you hear from him all the time on the podcast. Like, you hear that. There's a sort of running commentary. And I think all of that weighs into the general feeling in that locker room, which is like, there's a split between the older and the younger who've been there, who've been through the wars with him. Like, people, there's still a reverence for him in that organization. I pressed all those buttons today in those conversations. Is there an anger at him? I think there might have been when it first happened, but because he got suspended and people feel that was unjust, there's still a respect for his contributions as a whole.
Yeah,
like, somebody called him a loyal soldier to me.
Yeah, like, and I think the sense I got last night when it first happened, the reaction wasn't, "Hey, we're angry with Draymond."
Yeah,
it was, "Hey, we're gonna go." The sense I got from one. And one player was, "Hey, we're gonna go out and kick their ass. That's what we're gonna try to do here in Game 3." It wasn't pointed at him, but history will remember how this ends based on winning or losing in game three. That's going to be a big part of how this, if they win game three and now Draymond's coming back for game four with a chance to tie the series and go back to Sacramento 2-2 and put a tremendous amount of pressure on a young Kings team in a game five. You know, so far the Kings have held on to home court, and it feels, I always thought they could win, they would win two games. Listen, this so easily could just be 2-2 going back.
Yeah.
And the Warriors drill them twice at home. But it's harder with Draymond out of the lineup. Yeah, there's no question.
And we're going to have to see either, it's either going to be Kevon Looney just plays the whole game, or we're going to have to see Kuminga. We're going to have to see some of the young guys. Like, this is, you know, Steve Kerr has been through these kind of situations before where they haven't had Steph for certain playoff runs. They haven't had Draymond for certain games. Klay's been out in and out some of the times during these runs. But this is probably the steepest hill they've had to climb since the whole run, really. Well, I don't know. I'll pause on that. Let's take that back. The Oklahoma City series, that was a pretty big one.
Yeah.
Game six, Klay. That was the biggest one.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand slams, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Listen, this is a Warriors team. It's going to look different next year.
Yep.
It is not going to look the same. And I think there's going to be really hard choices for them to make on this roster. I don't think they want to have a $500 million payroll, and I don't think they will. And so, you know, I think the view is the choices are going to be built around Draymond Green and Klay Thompson.
Yep.
Klay Thompson has 1 year left on his deal. Draymond Green has a player option at $27.5 million. Dollars. Lots of ways that can go. You can opt out and become a free agent. You can opt into the deal and play out your contract. You can extend off of that. So there's lots of ways.
It reminds me a little of James Harden last year with the Sixers, where if he just picks up the player option, in some ways that's worse, even though it because you extend off that number. But if you opt out and then do more of a team-friendly deal, then – you know, James Harden got a lot of credit this year for sacrificing so they could go get PJ Tucker and et cetera. Like, there's a world in which all of them come back. But that world is much easier to imagine if they have a long playoff run and, you know, the aptly named Chase Center, because they literally print money every time they have games there. I mean, it is that profitable of a setup. And that matters. That deep playoff run matters.
You still have to want to pay a $500 million payroll. Yeah. You still have to want to do that, no matter how much money you make. A lot of owners make money on their teams and don't spend like that. And I give Joe Lacob that credit because he has been willing to spend. And I get it. They do make a lot of money. There's also a lot of owners who make a lot of money and don't spend that way.
That's right.
And want to win. And he has. And so, listen, that's going to be as interesting of a playoff game as we've had yet in this postseason. There have been some great ones. Let's move quick, Ramona, to another series that's come back to where we are in L.A., Suns-Clippers, Clippers-Steel, Game 1. You know, it feels like such an uphill climb for a Clippers team that without Paul George, and we've reported he's likely out for the series no matter how long it extends, you know, if you're looking on the court and being honest about it, the Suns have four of the best five players in the series, right?
Yep.
Kawhi and Kevin Durant, and then it's Booker, it's Chris Paul, it's DeAndre Ayton, but they stole Game 1.
Yep.
Do the Clippers have enough? Can Kawhi Leonard play at a high enough level to keep that, to make this a long series?
Okay, so let's start with this. I have been watching Kawhi the last 2-3 months. And people don't talk about him in the regular season, especially after Paul George got hurt. But he has been a monster the last couple of months of the season. Like, he is playing at as high a level as anyone in this league. If he could ever play at that level for an entire season, he'd be an MVP.
More efficient than he's ever played. He's been as good as anybody in this league.
Anybody. I don't name me a player. He is that good. The last 2 months of the year, he's been incredible. And especially since Paul George has been out. I thought he's really put this team on his back, and he looks healthier than I've seen him even the year that they went to the Western Conference Finals, where he had the knee injury in that Utah series, but before that against Dallas, he looks healthier to me than he did then. So I usually start every Kevin Durant's the best player. I don't know, Kawhi's right there with him. He's really good right now. Book has elevated himself into that conversation as well. But I think what the Clippers have is they have so many different looks that they can throw at you. And they have a hell of a coach. And who's
at his best this time of year.
Exactly.
Ty Lue is a great, great postseason coach. He's not afraid to experiment. And Stan Van Gundy said it the other night on TV. That is a real compliment. He's not afraid to get criticized. He's not afraid to do things that might get other people criticized. And some coaches will play it safe. I don't want...
Yep.
And it's not just the public criticizing you. It's your owner, your GM. And Ty has a fearlessness about him to experiment, try things, and just a great feel. Yep. You've seen this with him in the postseason, and this is a Clipper team that came out and certainly in game one was really physical, and I think pushed the Suns back a little bit in game one.
They look like just faster, more athletic. There's waves. Like, they can throw waves at you with the different, you can have Westbrook, you can have Norman Powell out there, you can have Terrence Mann. Like, they have so much depth. And like we were talking about the salary cap and the luxury tax and the three teams that are, up at that level. That's where this matters. Like, that trade that they did for Covington and Norman Powell 2 years ago.
You couldn't do that trade now.
No. That would not be allowed now.
Yeah, and you can't go sign the mid-level exception guy. So it was John Wall for them, which didn't make an impact.
Yeah. Which became Russell Westbrook.
And you couldn't sign Russell Westbrook, who's a buyout guy.
Right.
So those are three things. Can't do buyout players when you're in that threshold. You can't, the trade where you take on a bunch of salary and don't get back much. Those are all limited. So team building.
Yep.
But teams will just adjust. But team building is impacted, and you're going to see different decisions made about how many star players, how many big salaries you want to stack up.
But like, look at this team right now. They have so many options. And that's a big word now, optionality. But when you have a really good coach and you give him a lot of options to throw at a team like Phoenix, that's very top heavy. And they just need another transaction cycle to sort of replenish the depth that they gave up. I think they'll look a little different next year too. But it's really the Clippers' depth and their optionality against the Suns' stars.
Yeah, I just think if Durant and Booker are playing at a really high level, the Clippers don't have enough to win this series. They have to muck this thing up. They have to
will, though.
Yeah.
I think they're going to throw zones at them. Maybe they'll box and one on KD. They'll do all the...
But it won't be the gimmicks. It'll be being really how the game's officiated, how physical they can be with them. And then can Kawhi just keep playing at this...
unreal level.
Otherworld level, and he's done it on the defensive end too.
The thing about Westbrook, and I'll say this because I usually when guys do a buyout, when teams pick up a buyout player, very rarely does it ever impact much in the postseason.
It usually doesn't. For all the time we spend on buyouts and who's getting who and breathless and chasing them, they typically don't. This year, let's go back, Patrick Beverley made an impact.
He did.
In Chicago. They wanted Westbrook too, and Westbrook goes to the Clippers. Yep. They bring Patrick Beverley home. They needed him in their locker room. It was a languishing
Kevin Love
group.
In Miami.
Kevin Love now in the certainly game one against Milwaukee, impactful. So you're right. This
Jay
year,
Crowder.
That was a trade.
Same kind of thing. Late pickup.
That was a trade.
Very rarely do guys in this category, but like Russell Westbrook has made an impact in this series. Not just the plays at the end of game one, but like he's defensively, he's playing at a level I haven't seen him since UCLA. And I covered him at UCLA. Okay. So I was a little cub reporter covering the Ben Howland teams. So I know Russell Westbrook can play defense.
He had some pretty good years in Oklahoma City.
I know. But defensively?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Like defensively, like I have not seen him have these kind of impact plays.
No, he was tremendous. Certainly the last couple minutes against the Suns and the play on Devin Booker in the last 20 seconds.
I mean, he's blocking everyone out there.
Listen, he had the 3-for-19, and a lot was made of that, and those were shots that I think they prefer he'd not take. But I think for the most part, Russell Westbrook has played as the Clippers asked him to play. And when they sat down with him, Lawrence Frank, Ty Lue, and talked about here's what it has to look like for this to work, he told them, that's how I'm going to play. I'm going to fit within that archetype of what you guys want. And he's done that this year. And they want him to be a playmaker.
And I think I said this to you on the show when we talked about that. I was like, I heard that with the Lakers too. I heard he was going to do that, you know, at the beginning of the year, and it didn't really materialize most. I mean, sometimes it did, but other times. But he really has done that. And I think it's also because when he was not doing that, or even when he was playing well, but just Ty Lue felt the game would be better with Norm Powell and Terrence Mann as the guard grouping rather than Eric Gordon and Russell Westbrook. He just didn't play the second half sometimes, or he'd play a couple minutes and then he would just be out of the rotation. And like when you have a coach that's sitting you regularly and just putting you in when you fit and taking you out when you don't, like there's nothing. I mean, he took it well. Like, you know, whether he wants to talk about it or not, or how that felt, I don't know what he was saying in the car ride home or whatever it is, how he dealt with that, but like there was a lot of second halves this year where he didn't play much, and it wasn't like, oh, you're benched and we didn't make a huge deal of it. Like that's the difference also playing with the Clippers and the Lakers. Like if he would have done that with the Lakers, the whole story would have been about that. Oh, they didn't play Westbrook in the second half. Oh, he's not in the closing lineup. But the Clippers, like, you barely notice, especially if they won.
Let's jump east, Ramona, to a team that I know you pay very close attention to, despite living out here on the West Coast. The Philadelphia 76ers, who very clearly appear to be on a collision course with the Boston Celtics in the conference semifinal. It's a series I think everyone's been looking forward to. I think you always had a sense that it was those two teams were going to go through each other. And Boston's having a pretty easy time with Atlanta. The same with Philly with Brooklyn. Yep. I don't know if there's a team in the league that has more at stake with getting out of the second round, advancing from the conference semis, for how that organization team will look moving forward, then what's at stake for the Sixers?
I agree. I mean, last year there was a lot of talk about, okay, let's give Doc Rivers and James Harden and Joel Embiid a whole year together. Let's do a preseason and have a whole full season together so they can work it all out and how they're going to play. And you know, and I buy that too, because I do think it takes players who, you know, you can say all you want, like the Embiid Harden pick and roll is the most efficient play in basketball. The stats back that up. It's not really a natural pick and roll game. Like Embiid is not Clint Capella. He doesn't roll to the basket and dunk. It's not really his game. He does a pick and pop, and he does his own stuff. But they really have, they figured out however it's going to be. It's not a perfect fit. But because both of them are such good players and so smart basketball intelligence wise, like they've worked out the best version of how it can be. But it just keeps coming, and it always does this with great players. It always does. Michael Jordan had to get through the Pistons, right? Or he had to get like the Knicks have to beat the Bulls or whoever it is.
The difference, right, though, in those days were it was largely the same group of players failing, succeeding, succeeding a little more, succeeding a little more. Now, when you fall short once or twice,
that's it.
The pieces are all switched. Yeah. I'm out, he's out,
and
we're moving, right? There's less of that, right? There's less of that. That's not going to be the case in Philly. They're not looking at it that way. And the players, the groups aren't together. Like, we can look at Memphis and say, hey, this is a group. Hey, they're going to be around a long time together. They're going to grow. Just because guys are under contract doesn't mean it's quote-unquote sustainable, because we know that can change in a minute. But Philly, right, they're the one.
Yeah.
This year, they have got to. There's going to be change there if they don't get. There may be change if they go to the finals.
Yeah.
James Harden's future is very unclear in Philadelphia. Houston is very much in play for him. And I think a lot may depend on, do they make a run and win, and it's easy to pay him long-term big money, or he just wants to be back in Houston, and win or lose, he goes, or it's dependent on the team's success, but it's going to look different.
It's going to look different. And I think they kind of kicked the can down the road last year with the with the deal he signed. He took a little less money. You know, he was able to do a team friendly contract. They got PJ in there. They got Daniel House. They also have a decision on Tyrese Maxey, who's up for an extension. He's a guy a lot of people covet.
Yeah, he's going to get a big contract.
And that team is going to get more and more expensive. They already have Tobias Harris, who's on a big contract, and mm-hmm. Joel is on a big contract. Like, you know, not to mention, you know, just depending on the day of the week, how people feel about Doc Rivers in Philly, right? he's become sort of the lightning rod for the fan base there. And so I just think there's, as you say, I don't think there's a franchise that has as much riding on this postseason as the Philadelphia 76ers. When you talk about teams that stayed together and that you can work through it, the Celtics did that because their players were young.
Yeah.
Like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, those guys can play a couple years.
And they overachieved early. Yeah. It felt like they were way ahead of schedule early, and it was a little bit of house money. But then last year you get to the finals and you go, okay, like we've got to – and, you know, Jaylen Brown, that's on. But you know what? It's just where we are in this league. Like, none of it is ever. It's why organizations, I should say, appreciate having the Steph Curry who I think they feel like it is not a year-to-year proposition. Now, they've done an incredible job in Golden State of. They've won 4 championships in 8 years, and they've had great talent around him. He's never had to think about going anywhere else. But everywhere else, you are fighting for your life with either getting more talent, finding more talent, or keeping the great talent you have compatible.
Yeah.
And that becomes...
Good word.
Right? That's the hard part.
Because the thing is, like, you and I have covered this league enough to know that you don't have to be best friends with, you know, out there on the court. But if you play together well, if you figure out how to make the pieces work and you win, that you can stay together a long time. It's fine. I get the sense there's the locker room's fine there. This isn't like a locker room you walk in and you sense something's wrong. Like it's not like that. But these are not perfect fits, right? And when you have a guy who's in his mid-30s who's going to be due for a giant contract, like you can't just keep having second round exits, right?
Yeah, and you're exactly right about that, Ramon, in the contract. And I think something that's can be very overplayed sometimes is when teams, organizations or teams talk about, oh, all of our guys go out to dinner together. They're all so close. That doesn't mean anything to me. What matters is you don't have to be close. You have to care about winning. You have to care about giving of yourself and have to maybe sacrifice some things like and coming in and putting the work every day. Going to dinner and vacationing together and hanging out.
That's for Instagram.
It doesn't really, right? Like,
that's literally.
You don't need to be. It's great if that's the case. That's great. But you don't have to have close relationships. You have to have a respect.
Yeah.
Right? And an understanding that we need each other if we want to, if winning comes first. And I think that's, you know, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, they don't have to be close friends, but they see what that partnership is. And I'm not saying they are or they're not. Same with Harden and Embiid. They're not. Those two aren't hanging out together, and they don't need to.
They don't need to. It's fine. I mean, like, Joel sort of famously doesn't drink. He doesn't go out. He doesn't go to nightclubs. He, like, goes home to a suburban big house in the Philly burbs and plays with his son. Like, he's got, you know, a 3-year-old son. Like, that's what he does. James Harden has a very different lifestyle, right? Who cares, right? That's what I've heard. Yeah, right. But like, who cares? It's fine as long as you have a respect in the court. Well, James Harden led the league in assists this year. He has changed his game somewhat to fit alongside Joel Embiid. And I think he would continue to do that if they win. But if you don't win, and we all act like this is up to James Harden too. Like, what does he want? I don't know that there's anybody who could tell you what James wants right now.
And that's why, like, the pressure's on to win now. This isn't ever anymore a 3-4 year proposition. The pressure is on the Milwaukee Bucks to win another championship, to keep Giannis Antetokounmpo happy, to look at the group he has and say, we have the pieces to be good moving forward, that we can continue this thing. And that's the pressure that teams and organizations have at all times, and you see it bubble to the surface this time of year.
Yeah, and the only question to me is how big of a, you know, how do you make change? Sometimes people make change just to make change, and they would have been better off just sticking with what they have and let everyone run it back and do it again. I don't know. Philly already did that with the Ben Simmons Joel era. They already kind of ran it back a few times. And then obviously it came to a screeching halt at the end, right? When with the way Ben's career ended there. But I get the vibe. This has always been heading for a collision course with Boston. I don't think they match up well with Boston. I just like Boston is just longer. They have more depth. Defensively, they're tougher. They have this scheme against Joel that tends to just force everyone else to beat them. Now, Joel has been so much better at passing out of double teams. The way Boston defends him, like, they, you know, Boston, Toronto, all the teams in the East, you know, they have a playbook. They throw it at the Sixers. Joel has studied the playbook that other teams have thrown at him. He's been really good at passing out of double teams. It's just Boston is an elite defensive team. And so it may come down to it may not be does Joel go for 50 every night. It may be what do they get from Tobias? What do they get from House? What do they get from Harden? Is, you know, do they isolate Harden and make Harden beat them? Like Boston is, because they all know they're on a collision course, they've already started scouting each other. They already have looks that they're going to throw at each other. You know Joe Mazzulla, right? I mean, this guy is as prepared as any coach I've ever met.
Yeah, and it's going to be in this time of year, you have to be, and he's a young coach going through this for the first time with a pretty young coaching staff.
Yeah.
People forget, lost David Stoudemire midway through the season to take the Georgia Tech job. And, you know, he's got a staff that'll be tested when you get in the postseason against, you know, now it's Quinn Snyder, it's Doc Rivers, it's Mike Budenholzer, it's Eric Spoelstra, you know, coaches who've won championships. And so, but the good news for Joe Mazzulla is he's got great talent and he's got buy-in from his key players. So, a lot coming here in
round one, both
conferences. Round one, we haven't even gotten into the visiting teams' buildings yet, but a lot to come. Ramona, thanks as always for taking time out.
Thank you.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.